This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
As we shift our gears to talk on China to train South Africa's public servants on its unique governance models. Hey, we just want to find out what is all this about, and we'll be joined by Deputy Director General, National School of Government. It seems that South Africa is going to be teaming up with the People's Republic of China to improve the capacity of public servants on governance, as well as the management of disasters and emergencies such as the COVID-19 pandemic that we are dealing with currently. And this is part and parcel, I suppose, of the broader agitation towards a capable state. I just wonder, don't we have the ingredients at home? But I don't have the answers. Dr. Butsabelo Maja is going to try and shed some light for us on this one. Dr. Maja, good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting us, Lukona.
Thank you for making the time. I mean, you are quite aware, it seems like it's the season of enlisting international help in South Africa these days. How bad are we, Dr. Maja, with our own homebred solutions to be going to China to check their governance models and have them helping to teach our public servants on this?
We are not bad, but we have to keep on improving.
Yeah.
And to improve, you have to be prepared to learn from others. And therefore, this interaction with the Chinese is part of our endeavor to keep on improving, to keep on learning from others. The challenges that we experience are not the same, but the lessons we can learn will always help us to become better citizens, to become a better country.
What are the key outcomes you are looking at in terms of this initiative, Dr. Maja? And I am asking this on the backdrop of probably take us through on the areas of intervention that you see as the greatest gaps we have in terms of training our public servants.
Look, what China has, which a number of us don't have, is probably that it's one of the most populous countries in the world. China, India, Brazil are quite big countries. When you manage there, when you lead there, and if you succeed, the lessons that emerge become easier for us smaller countries. South Africa is a country of about 55 million people to learn and to see how we can replicate. So for this intervention, we are looking at specifically three areas. Firstly, the area that we're looking at is around governance. What are their governance models that we can learn from? And we are choosing governance because you know that China is one of the biggest economies in the country. In fact, it is the only country in the last year of COVID that has still been able to grow its economy despite COVID. And we cannot ignore that. So we have to learn from that in terms of their governance model. Second area is how they're able to deal with emergencies. You know, and we link this to the third part, which is the COVID-19 pandemic. The COVID-19 started in Wuhan in China. Today, China is not having the third wave that many of us are experiencing all over the world. And we need to learn how they manage disasters, how they manage pandemics, and what kind of state capacity do they use to manage the kinds of problems that they have so well. So those are the three areas that we'll be looking at.
Now, let's deal with the issue of governance. How complicated does it become for South Africa to extract lessons from China when we have two very different political systems?
Yes, we do have two very different political systems, but that does not stop us from checking beyond their different political systems. Are there lessons that can be learned? For instance, if you look beyond their political system at their administration, they have what they refer to as a meritocratic public service. And built into that meritocratic public service is how they emphasize merit from beginning. So to enter that public service, China is the first country in the world to administer exams for public servants. If you want to be a public servant in China, you have to complete an examination system as part of their meritocratic system. So therefore, we can learn from that. In fact, we've started introducing that in South Africa, because today in South Africa, you cannot apply to be a senior civil servant unless if you have completed what we call Nyukela, which is our own examination system targeted at senior management in the public service. So there is a lot that we can learn beyond the political system when we look deeply into their administration, into their governance, into their management, into their leadership, and so forth.
I mean, part of the work done, and you'll appreciate this, Dr. Maja, whether from the work of the Auditor General or other reports from the Public Service Commission and other research work that is done by academics, that it seems our greatest problem are people who just don't have the will to do the right thing in our public service. How do you transform the ethical conduct, the morality of people and their psyche from this need to just off-ramp from what is expected of them in legislation, which is explained in our irregularity, in our irregularities in terms of expenditure, which is also explained in how our institutions are not functioning. In fact, the department you fall under just recently told us that about 35% of, quite senior people in the management of the public service don't seem to possess the necessary qualifications. So how do we get people to do the right thing ethically with all the tools that we might get from this partnership? What work are you doing to attend to this moral crisis in the public service?
This intervention that we are having with our Chinese counterpart forms part of what we call a framework for the professionalization of the public service, which is part of what you said at the beginning, Lukona, to build a capable developmental state. Mm. So we want to build this capable developmental state. And what are the key elements of it? The first thing is the ethics. We have to get the issue of the ethics of integrity correct. Then we must deal with the issues of ability. And with ability, we must cover both the qualifications, but also the skills and the intention, what we refer to as execution diligence. You know, the Chinese are very good at seeing to finish whatever they sought to do. So we have to begin that culture of what we refer to as execution diligence. It's just doing your job to the end. It's not enough that you have pushed paper from one desk to another, but it has to result in things that citizens can benefit from. And then, of course, the last part is merit. So we have to build it. Yes, there are these problems that you are mentioning, and we've inherited them, but we cannot leave them as they are. We have to do something about them. The partnership with China is about doing something. The framework for the professionalization of the public service is also about doing something. And we hope with all these elements, we will be able by the year 2030 to see a public service in South Africa that is developmental, that is capable. So that is our endeavor. With all these challenges, we remain focused on that goal.
Now, let's attend to something that is always contentious about these partnerships. What are the resources that you need for this partnership to happen? Are we spending any money? Are we going to be spending any money in this collaboration?
With the current collaboration that we've just entered into, the Chinese government will be sponsoring a great deal of this interaction. So the costs on us are almost zero. So we are very appreciative of that gesture from our Chinese colleagues in this regard.
So you would say that you're not looking at propping up money for accommodation, for logistics, for upkeep and sustenance?
You see, at the moment, with the COVID-19 pandemic, a lot of the training will be taking place online.
Okay.
So there will not be much traveling, much accommodation, because we are still under lockdown. We still have these challenges of COVID. The training, most of it will be happening online.
Now, if somebody is listening in and asking, but what is it that's in it for China? What is China going to benefit with this partnership? Why are they even expanding their resources on this?
Well, China is a global country that is very keen to build diplomatic relations with the continent, which is Africa. Remember that China is also part of the IPSA initiative, where India, South Africa, and Brazil are part of that process. So we see this as a bigger relationship building process. In fact, the genesis of this, Lukona, emerged in 2015 when the then Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa visited China. And these engagements began then already as part of our diplomatic engagements with the People's Republic of China.
Now, Dr. Maja, I mean, as you are talking, I am getting some questions for you. I have Lolo already on the line on 0861-987-000. There is an interesting question here that I am receiving, which talks to a 1999 Vincent Mapai report, which was really about restructuring the public service. That's when concepts of professionalization were introduced. You've had this episode go on and on for some time. The point really, I think, that is being made here is, why have we been so lethargic in our attendance to this particular issue? Because it's been with us for some time.
Yes, it's been with us for some time. There have been endeavors that have been taking place. The success rate might have been uneven, and the impact might also not have been coming through. But there have been small pockets of building through to where we are today. For example, in 2013 already, we introduced what we refer to as a compulsory induction program, so that all public servants, all those who enter public service, are subjected to this compulsory induction program. So that was a step that we took in 2013 already. You recall also, therefore, that in 2008, we started talking, and Cabinet approved then already, a revolving door policy where we are trying to encourage cross-pollination between those in public service and those in private sector, so that, you know, you're working for Power FM, but you might want to spend 6 months at GCIS in communication there to see what government is doing and how it's doing that. That aspect has to be enabled so that you can do that. If I, as a senior official in the National School of Government, want to go and spend 3 months at University of Pretoria learning new theories on public service and so forth, I can be able to do that. So there have been these small pockets that I'm using these few examples to illustrate that we're building it slowly. It's not going to turn around overnight. Even with these initiatives, they are not going to turn around overnight.
Okay, let me just go to Lolo on the line. Lolo, good morning.
Morning to your guests and power listeners. For 26 years, after 26 years, our government is now realizing that they must go to China to train our public servants. It can be. The problem with our public servants is no implementation from on their part. Municipal managers have not been doing the right things according to previous auditor generals, and corruption is the main reason why we are where we are today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lolo. They're talking about, you know, issues of corruption. I mean, Dr. Maja, these sentiments touch back to what I was asking you about when it comes to issues of ethics. You can take a horse to a river, but you can't force it to drink. How, in your analysis, is embedded the problem? How embedded is the problem of corruption in our country that this could just become one other futile exercise?
To deal with corruption, it will not just require training. There's much more that we have to do to deal with the problem of corruption. We accept that it's a very deep problem. Therefore, we have to deal with it from all its elements. From our side, for example, the minister, you'll recall, late last year announced that it's now compulsory for all public servants to do an ethics course, which is an online course which public servants can do. So that's just one aspect. The other aspect of dealing with corruption is about consequence management. So, for example, in the professionalization framework that we are pushing through Cabinet, One of the things that we are arguing is that public servants need to increasingly belong to professional bodies. So let me give you an example. In finance, for example, in most companies in the private sector, to be a CFO in a private company, you have to be a member of SAICA. But in government, it's not like that. So we want to introduce it. The reason why we're doing that is because your professional body, if you misbehave, if you steal, they can institute action against you and deregister you. And if you are deregistered and your employment contract required you to be registered, then that means that you'll have a problem with your employer. So we want to introduce that. And of course, there will also have to be other elements which are dealt with through our criminal justice system, because it's only when you tackle it from all those aspects that you will see a change. It's become endemic in some areas, and we have to deal with it very hard. And it's not just a public sector issue, by the way. It's also part of the problem that we inherit through the private sector. Where there's corruption, there is both government and private sector.
Absolutely. We have to be mindful of those. But Dr. Maja, please hold the line and just note some of our listeners. Busiso, good morning.
How are you guys?
I'm very well. How are you?
Why couldn't these guys give us a book, a blueprint or something? When our engineers or our whatever, people in parliament, why can't they be given a book? That means they are not on international standards. Why do we have to always take imsalaviga of other countries? I remember before COVID, there was I think it's Hong Kong or something like that. They were striking, saying they don't want to be under the rule of China.
Yes.
If they're rejecting China, because we can take a blueprint and see how it fits into the South African market. Have you been to the township? Can you understand? The township, it's a world on its own. Do you understand? And you want to bring somebody from China, where people don't want to pay electricity and whatever the case might be, and do what? And tell them how to guys, no, man. I prefer to come on now.
Sposiso is not impressed. They're highly disappointed in Tembisa. Silent, good morning.
Good morning. Let me start by saying that I heard the doctor saying that for you to register to be a CFO somewhere, you need to register with SAICA. But now, one of the things perhaps we need to implement in South Africa is politicians must have a statutory body as well. So that for you to be a member of parliament, you must be belonging to a statutory body. For you to be a minister, belong to that, so that they can also penalize you if you are found in corruption activities. And the other thing is that I need to submit is that no matter how much or how educated anyone you can bring from any country, as long as you don't fight corruption, that will be nothing. Because our biggest problem in South Africa and challenge is not skill. We have universities that are doing academic exchange, they are doing 1, 2, 3. They can always do that for us. But the biggest problem is corruption. And as long as you don't bring people that are going to fight corruption in South Africa, that will be an effortless exchange or to impart knowledge.
Silent.
Because immediately when those people leave, corruption takes
over.
Thank you.
Silent, thank you very much in Centurion. Ferena Heng, Aubrey, good morning.
Morning, Lukoni. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Aubrey. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, I just wanted to ask the doctor there that if, I just need to know if the online course, is it still available online or have they closed?
Course on ethics?
Yeah, on ethics, yes.
Okay. I'll get him. I'm giving him a chance to respond. Tammy in Four Ways, good morning.
Hi, Likona, how are you doing?
Fantastic, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks. Likona, we've just been told that our country is officially owned by Chinese. If they don't own half of this country, they own everything. Because I'm telling you, this gentleman is just telling us that the Chinese are taking over their own country and that they don't want it to be run by people that are incompetent, so they want to run it themselves. It's not as if like those people are not even here. They're here already. And then it's not about like telling us about the traveling and all. No, Chinese own half of this country anyway. So they just want to make sure that, you know, they did that with Zimbabwe. They did that with Zambia. They're in parliament. They're in government. So if Chinese give you money, you know, obviously they want something to hold on to. And right now they're taking away their country. you know, we're going to be repossessed out of this country not so long, I'm telling you.
Tell me, not so positive there. Dr. Maja, you've listened to those concerns and some questions.
Yes, thank you very much, Lukona. The first point was raised by Sibusiso. We're not just engaging with the Chinese independent of context. We're making sure that this engagement assists us in terms of contextualizing it within the South African space. Many of us are on the ground. Many of us are South Africans who are involved in this. We engage with the Chinese. We go through the curriculum. We developed it together to see how can it be contextualized to our own benefit. So we're not just taking a ready-made product and bringing it here. It is linked to our needs and our responses as a country. So I think he can be comfortable there that we are very sensitive ourselves to making sure that this program must talk to what we need here and the responses we require here, which, I mean, of course, links to the point Tami was making about the Chinese taking over.
Yeah.
Look, we're not just engaging with the Chinese. In fact, last week Friday, we signed an agreement with the civil service of Singapore because we want to learn something from Singapore. You know that Singapore, in the international math and science study that's commonly referred to as TIMSS, constantly performs very high in math and science, number one, number two. We want to learn also from Singapore. And I can go on with a number of other partnerships that we're engaging in. Mm. It's not just with the Chinese. The point Silent makes about the statutory body for politicians, maybe I'll leave that one to you, Lukona, to respond.
Yes.
And then the point that Obru was asking, yes, the answer is a simple yes. The ethics course is still available
there.
Online. He can register and be able to complete it online.
I mean, Dr. Maja, there is this point Busiso raises about, you know, how China was being rejected by Hong Kong. And if you watch documentaries in Hong Kong about how China, part of its programming of citizens is to use propaganda and, you know, drive a particular narrative, block certain types of news, force people to do certain things. And we spoke at the beginning about this political systems problem. How do you give confidence to a South African that there's something to learn from China, even if they still act in these repressive ways in some areas?
Because, you see, as I said to you right at the beginning when you raised this, Lukona, we're not focusing on the political system of China because our political system in South Africa is completely different from the Chinese, and we are not intending to change our political system. What we are learning from is their governance. And the governance is not the political system. So I mentioned the meritocratic system that they have, for example. Those things we can utilize aspects of it. For example, the examination system that I talked about.
Mm.
We can do our own examination here without being a repressive regime.
Mm. Okay. Dr. Maja Lorato has a question on Twitter. How many study tours has government taken with the aim of learning from others, and how many of those have been integrated into projects with evidence of success? You're quite aware. Like you're saying, it's not just China. In France, there is a similar school that is quite lauded in terms of its success and training of civil servants. So how many of these study tours have we done? I mean, I've seen people in the education sector going to Finland, South Korea, but we're still not moving.
Yeah, remember, this is not a study tour.
Yes, but I think the sentiment is to say the study tours themselves were meant to harvest knowledge and bring it home.
Sure.
So that there is a point. That's why we pay for them. So I think while it is not a replica of the other, but I think the sentiment is really what is the driving point.
Yes, no. The sentiment is valid. But you see, in responding to that sentiment, I think we cannot generalize. I agree that there are many areas where those study tours might not have helped us, but there are other areas where they've helped us. And what we need to do is to harness those areas where the study tours and the engagements have helped us and see how we can become lifelong learners. Remember, in South Africa, we've been very clear that we are a lifelong learning nation.
Mm.
So lifelong learning is something we embrace And it's something that we seek to always do as we improve ourselves as a country. Yes, I think generally speaking, Lukona, you're right. I mean, there have been wasteful study tours, I'll admit to you. There have been many wasteful study tours, but some have helped us. And where we can learn, where in this case, for example, we are looking for specific lessons and we are going to be teaching people these lessons. And we hope that they learn, and we hope that when they go back to their places of work, they implement the things that they're learning so that we can see a difference. I mean, as you said at the beginning, we are trying to build a capable developmental state. And without that, this country will never grow.
Dr. Maja, before I let you go, some listening in are academics, are people who have done extensive research and are more than willing to train. As they listen to this, how do you make sure they don't feel like their work is not being recognized as part of forming this capable state?
Yes, we engage. In fact, we hope to have another engagement during May with all our universities in this country, where we would want them to begin to input into the professionalization of the public service. We are also keen, by the way, to influence the curriculum and the content that universities are teaching, especially with regards to those who end up working for public service.
Yeah.
We also have in our system what we call independent individual contractors, where we invite academics to register with us. And many of them are actually already registered with the national school to impart knowledge, to train, to provide the curriculum that we require. So many of these academics that you're talking about are already working with us as we speak.
Dr. Maja, thank you very much for making time for us this morning here on Power Talk to just get through this point.
Thank you very much, Lukona. I appreciate it,
absolutely.
And all the best.
Absolutely appreciate it. Deputy Director General of the National School of Government, Dr. Butsabelo Maja.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.